Thank you very much. While I might be the first female head of the Domestic Markets Department, there's more than just me, and I hope this is the beginning of a long journey of female speakers from the Reserve Bank. So, sorry, I have to put my glasses on, otherwise I can't read. So good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to speak here today. Today, I want to talk about long-term developments in the Australian equity market. Equities are important for the Australian economy. Today, the equity market is one of Australia's largest financial markets. As you can see in the graph here, the equities markets line is red. The total values of companies listed here is a bit under $2 trillion. And as you can see in this graph, the red line is now more than 100% of GDP. This has not always been the case. The equity market has grown rapidly as a share of GDP over the last 20 years. Before the 1960s, that's about halfway through that graph, the government bond market, in light blue, was by far the most important financial market in Australia. Equities are also an important part of Australians' retirement savings. While most people don't own shares directly, anyone with a superannuation, and that would be quite a few here, I suppose, usually holds equities indirectly through their funds investments. Payments from listed companies in the form of dividends and share buybacks were worth almost $100 billion in the past 12 months. Just by way of comparison, this is equivalent to about 5% of household income. Listed companies employ a substantial number of people, and many of Australia's well-known companies are listed on the stock exchange. This does not mean that the performance of the stock exchange is the same thing as the performance of the economy. But by understanding developments affecting listed companies, we can gain timely insights into what's happening in the economy more broadly. And the Reserve Bank pays close attention to the equity market in particular because it is a transmission channel of monetary policy. When interest rates go down, share prices tend to increase, and this increases the wealth of households who hold those equities. Higher share prices, in turn, make it relatively cheaper for companies to issue shares, allowing them to expand. Today, I would like to take a step back and look at the Australian equity market through a longer-term lens. I will focus on returns on equities and the composition of the equity market through time. I will conclude with some observations on price-to-earnings ratios. Many of the graphs and numbers in this presentation draw in part from historical data sets compiled by staff at the RBA, and I would particularly note that some of those are actually here in the room today. These data, like all historical data, should be interpreted with some caution. Nonetheless, we think that they are of a sufficient quality to provide some useful insights, and we will soon make them widely available to interested researchers. So, how do returns on equity investments compare to other financial assets in Australia? The return on equities in red includes gains from both share price changes or capital gains and dividends paid out. This graph shows the cumulative returns on financial assets from $100 invested in 1900, and that's adjusted for inflation. And as you can see, over the long run, equities have been worth much more to investors than other investment options. They have returned about 5 percentage points more than long-term bonds, that's the blue line, on average every year. This accumulates to a very large amount of money over a long period of time. If you had put $100 into the equity market in 1900 in a portfolio that tracked the stock market index, you would have over $100,000 today after adjusting for inflation. This is more than 100 times what you would have earned from a government bank or from a government bond or a bank deposit. Perhaps more relevant to our own investment decisions, if you had put $100 into the equity market when you were 20 years old, given average returns, it would have been worth more than $1,000 when you retired at age 65. If you had invested it in government bonds, it would have been worth only a quarter of that. But investing in the equity market comes with risk. The equity market is more volatile than many other markets. The average volatility in returns generated by equities in this graph is double that of bonds. So the volatility of the red line is double the volatility of the blue line. That means that at any point in time, investors get a return that can be very different from the average return. And developments such as the global financial crisis have emphasized this. In the middle of financial crisis, share prices fell by around 50%. If you had a superannuation portfolio based on equities, the value of your retirement funds would have declined significantly and remained lower for quite some time. If you were in or close to retirement, you may have had to lock in some of those lower share prices. This emphasizes the value of a diversified portfolio, but also the importance of taking a longer-run view on the equity market. There are, of course, different sorts of companies on the stock exchange, and you might expect that they would provide different return profiles. This is true for some. Companies like utilities, for example, generally have more bond-like properties, and so their prices are quite correlated with bond prices. At the same time, returns in broader sectors have been remarkably similar over the past century. You can see this in this graph, which shows the cumulative returns on equities in three broad sectors over the past 100 years. The Reserve Bank often looks at the broad sectors, resources, financials, and others. Indeed, the average annual returns over that period across the three sectors have been within half a percentage point of each other. Of course, resources stocks have been a bit more volatile, in part reflecting their exposure to volatile commodity prices. So what if we compare this with overseas? This graph shows the average annual returns on stocks in Australia, the United States, and the United Kingdom since 1900. The total returns is the dividends, that's the red bars, and the capital gains, that's the blue bars taken together. So you can see the total at about 10%, the average annual returns are quite similar. The pattern is not much different if you look at the capital gains, so the blue bars, and the dividends, the red ones, separately. However, over shorter periods, there's more divergence internationally, as you can see in this graph. In particular, over the past 25 years, Australian stocks have gone up a bit less than the rest of the world. So that's the blue bars, that's the capital gains. And particularly the United States stands out as that, as you can see in the blue bars in the graph. Australian companies pay high dividends due in part to the specific tax treatment they receive. I'm referring here to the franking credits, which were initially introduced in 1987. Once we take the higher dividend payments into account, Australian stocks have generated above average returns, so that's the combined blue and red bars over the past 25 years. Let's have a closer look at the companies that make up the Australian Stock Exchange, or abbreviated the ASX. This graph compares the concentration of the stock exchange for different countries. The bars show what share of the total market capitalization is accounted for by the top 10 companies. On this metric, as you can see, the ASX is quite concentrated in large companies, with the top 10 companies accounting for a bit less than half of the market capitalization of the ASX. You will notice that the countries with the larger concentrations on the right-hand side of the graph tend to be smaller economies. So among similar-sized exchanges, the level of concentration seen at the ASX is not unusual. It means, however, that an investor in a market capitalization-weighted portfolio of equities is exposed to developments in a smaller set of companies. This concentration has been a feature of the Australian Stock Exchange throughout its existence. In fact, it has been largely the same set of companies that have comprised most of the universe of Australian stocks over its history. This graph tries to illustrate this point. The top panel takes all companies listed currently at the ASX weighted by market capitalization, and it then distributes them according to the year the company or its predecessor was founded. The reddish-purple section marks companies that are currently in the top 100 companies of the ASX. The bottom panel does the same exercise, aggregated across a number of developed economies. What stands out is that for the ASX, there are a lot of high purple-red bars on the left-hand side of the panel. That is, a lot of top 100 companies are old, and they are large in terms of market capitalisation. In fact, the average listed Australian company, when weighted by market capitalisation, is about 100 years old. This makes our listed companies, on average, substantially older than those in the United States or Japan, and those two countries make up the bulk of the bottom panel. But it is comparable to the United Kingdom, France, and Germany, although stock exchanges there existed several hundred years before ours. A striking number of large, still existing Australian companies were founded in the 1800s, in many cases before the existing of stock exchanges in Australia. These are mostly the predecessors of the banks and mining companies, which have their origins in colonial banks and 19th century mining booms, respectively. By contrast, very few large public Australian companies have been founded in the past 50 years. And many of the large listings, such as the Commonwealth Bank of Australia and Telstra, have been privatisations. In this respect, Australian markets are something of an outlier globally. That said, the stock exchange has not been completely static over the past century, and there have been substantial compositional shifts at times. This graph shows the ASX shares of the three large sectors I mentioned earlier, financial, resources, and others, through time. The resources sector in orange has tended to expand and contract with mining booms and commodity prices. During the mining boom of the 2000s, which you can see here at the far right, the share of stock market capitalization accounted for by resources companies doubled over a period of 5 years. And you can see that in that graph clearly between the 2000 and the 2010 share. At their peak, resources companies made up about a third of the ASX 200. But this pales in comparison with the experience of the late 1960s boom, where the resources sector was worth at its peak in 1970 around 65% of the exchange by market capitalization. And you can see that that's the very large bar you see in the middle of the graph. Of course, resources booms tend to be followed by busts, and so the large share in the 1970s shrunk within a few years. On average, the resources sector has a larger weight on the stock exchange than it has in the real economy. This could reflect that financing mines can be a speculative, risky investment. Equity can be a more attractive way to finance such investment, allowing investors with a matching risk appetite to share in the potentially large upside without saddling the company with large debt repayment obligations if the resources discovery and the associated revenue disappoints. The ASX is bank-heavy, and the financial sector in blue, more broadly, makes up about a third of the exchange by market capitalization. This is almost exactly the same share as it was 100 years ago. But in fact, for most of the 20th century, the sector was quite small, reflecting the regulation following the Great Depression. And it regained its historical share only in the 1980s and 1990s. The sector has also diversified quite a lot since its early days, with diversified financials and insurance companies accounting for a much larger share than they used to. Other sectors in green have reflected changes in the industry composition of the Australian economy over the past 100 years. The rise and fall of manufacturing was reflected on the exchange, with manufacturers frequently featuring in the top 10 companies through the 1940s and 50s. Most of these have since delisted. A company that ferried people across the Sydney Harbour was in the top 50 companies on the exchange for decades, until its business model was disrupted by the construction of the Harbour Bridge. More generally, in the transportation sector, ferries, steamships, and railroads have largely been replaced by road infrastructure and air travel. On the other hand, some sectors played a significant role in the economy, but not on the stock exchange. Agriculture, forestry and fishing is one example, which for the first half of the 20th century accounted for up to 30% of GDP. But it has rarely featured in much size on the stock exchange. More generally, the size of the equity market relative to GDP, which is one measure of capital market development, has fluctuated around about 100% of GDP over the past two decades. This is broadly in line with the markets of other developed economies. Australian companies have continued to raise capital on the stock market, and the number of listed companies has continued to increase, albeit a bit more slowly of late. All this suggests that equities remain an important source of funds for Australian companies in a wide range of industries. Finally, I would like to touch on valuations. In the global low interest environment of recent years, some commentators, including the Reserve Bank, have raised the prospect that this has led to a search for yield by global investors, where they bid up the price of risky assets and thus increase the risk of a sharp correction down the road. One simple way of measuring this for the equity market is a price-to-earnings ratio, shown in this graph for both Australia and the United States. By this measure, Australian equities are not showing signs of heightened valuations. This graph, though, also emphasises that in the long run, share prices are driven by fundamentals, that is, company profits or earnings. The Australian share market will likely be dominated in the future by companies able to sustain profit growth over long periods of time, as it has been in the past. This may be the current large listed companies, many of whom have managed to play a role in Australia's listed equity market for a very long period of time, as I discussed. Or it may be others. But some points I've discussed today are unlikely to change. The stock market will most likely remain both an important source of funds for Australian corporations and an investment vehicle for Australian households and foreign investors. Equities will be more volatile than safer assets, but will very likely yield higher returns over the long term. And the composition of the market will continue to broadly reflect the structure of the real economy. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. I just wonder whether you have any comments or questions, please. Yes, just the microphone is there.
Thank you. He's Kim from the Bank of Korea, and thank you for your, you know, insightful presentation. And I have a question. The reduction in the role of resource sector relative to financial sector is very remarkable, and people say Australian dollar is commodity currency. But this shows that the degree of Australian dollar being commodity currency becoming less and less. So what's the implication on the role of the central bank in determining the Australian dollar's value? So maybe the equity market does not relate so much, but still, the resource matters, I think. Thank you.
Yep, I can take that, or then we'll see. Someone jumped back. I was going to go back to the resources graph. Can I get back to the presentation just to illustrate the point? Yep. Thank you. Here we go. No, this one here. So I think your question had two parts, one on the role of the resources sectors, relative to financial sector, and one on the Australian dollar. I'd like to just take them apart separately. So I think it's a little bit hard to say on the basis of this graph that the resources sector has really been on a eternal decline relative to the financial sector, because as you can see, the financial sector was actually back in the early 1900s as big as it is now. And what you see is that the resources sector, and that's true for the real economy as much as expanding and contracting as we go through commodity price booms. So I'm not quite sure whether we have really there a we can identify a secular shift from one to the other. But what you quite rightly pointed out is the Australian economy and the stock market index is one reflection of what the real economy looks like. It is not just commodities, right? It's producing a lot of other goods and services, and financial services being one. But I also want to point out that 50% certainly of the stock market are actually in companies associated with other than those two sectors. And again, it's not easy to identify a clear trend that one or the other is in secular decline or a secular increase. I think it just reflects the dynamic over very long term in the economy. As for the Australian dollar, it gets affected by many more things, as you pointed out, than just the stock market. There's a lot of capital flows. I think the one thing I wanted to point out, though, is we don't determine the Australian dollar. So we have a floating exchange rate regime. It's determined by market participants' needs and wants to exchange Australian dollar for foreign currency. And so as a central bank, we don't really have a role to play. It served us well, but it should quite rightly reflect changes in the real economy. But I would not want to take the commodity price angle, certainly from a stock market perspective.
Hi, my name is Nina. I have a question on the monetary policy of Australian Central Bank. How large is its role, in your view, for the stock market changes compared to the US, for instance?
Thank you, Nina. So I think as anyone who's a researcher on the transmission mechanism of monetary policy tells you is why we have economic models, theoretical models, tying down any specific number is hard empirically. So those estimates they can vary and through time, and they're wide, they vary across researchers. That is true for Australia, that is true for the US. And so the short end to a long answer is actually that it's very hard to give an answer to your question, just because it is very hard to compare models across the economies to say, here I've pinned it down. So what we know is there is a transmission mechanism. It is by and large at play, but to point it down to a specific coefficient of that's what happens, that is very hard, and I don't have a comparable model at hand to be able to allow you to do that. But it might be a great research topic for anyone who wants to pick it up.
Thank you very much indeed. I think all okay. Great presentation, quite informative in terms of content and also the way she answered your questions. Demonstration of the quality and ability of members of Reserve Bank. That's wonderful. Thank you again. Much appreciated.